This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm John Idstey. This week, the U.S. Department of Agriculture is expected to release its latest update on the food stamp program. It's an important indicator of the nation's economic health, and the prognosis is not good. Food stamp use is up 70% over the last 4 years, and that trend is expected to continue. NPR Senior Business Editor Marilyn Geewax is here with details. Welcome, Marilyn.
Hi, John.
So the economy has been growing for more than 2 years now, slowly, but I guess not fast enough to slow down the increased use of the food stamp program.
Right. At this time, 4 years ago, just before the recession hit, about 27 million Americans were getting food stamps. Today, it's about 46 million. That's roughly 15% of the population. And what's really striking when you look at the chart on this is the line just goes straight up. Economists think that the report that's going to come out this week, it'll show that it keeps going up.
But the economy has been adding jobs since 2009, not enough to make a real dent in unemployment, but still an increase. Why doesn't food stamp use reflect that?
Well, there are a few reasons. First, nearly half of the 14 million people who are unemployed right now have been out of work 6 months or longer. And many of them, even when they do find jobs, remain eligible for food stamps. And that pretty much illustrates the other problem. Wages haven't been rising to keep pace with food costs. About 40% of the food stamp recipients live in a household where a family member is working. They are earning a wage. But the government's latest inflation report shows that the cost of living has gone up 3.6% over the past year, and wages really haven't budged that much.
And there are a lot of factors behind this rise in food prices.
Now, you name it. We've had spring floods, summer droughts, soaring global appetites for our foods. Those factors have contributed to about a 70% rise in the price of corn just since last August.
And can the food stamp program keep pace?
John, that's unclear because this is a very expensive program for taxpayers. It's not that it's so generous to individuals. The maximum for a family of four is $668 a month. That works out to about $42 per person per week. So if you figure each person eats 3 meals a day, that's about $2 for each meal. But when you put it all together, the collective tab is pretty big. Last year, it totaled something like $68 billion.
And that's certainly a lot when Congress is looking to cut federal spending.
Exactly. Spending on food stamps, you know, it was actually increased back in 2009 as part of the federal stimulus package. But that extra spending is going to expire in 2013. Of course, extending that kind of funding would be very controversial. Some economists say that the program is certainly worth every penny because it stimulates the economy. And really, there's not any question that a lot of grocery stores would see a huge drop in their business if their customers couldn't afford to buy food.
Right.
Some economists say that aid for food helps families spend more money on things like gasoline to drive a family member to work or to get coats for the kids to go to school.
But then, of course, there's the other school of thought that says government assistance leads to long-term dependency.
Yes, there are other economists and certainly a lot of lawmakers who would say that food stamps dampen your incentives to go out and find work or even do things like plant a garden. And there are also questions about fraud. Although about a third of the people who qualify for aid actually don't go and get it, there are lots of other people who try to scam the system. And, of course, plenty of taxpayers just object to this idea of having money taken from their paychecks and using it to put food on somebody else's table. These are some of the issues that I think we're going to hear a lot about in the coming month when lawmakers return to Washington and the farmers start to harvest those crops.
NPR Senior Business Editor Marilyn Geewax, thanks for joining us, Marilyn.
Oh, you're welcome, John.
Let's go next to Cleveland, Ohio, where officials are in the midst of an innovative program aimed at dealing with all the foreclosures blighting their region. They are reselling the marketable homes and tearing down the rest. Cities have razed crumbling and vacant houses for decades, but usually they have to pick up the tab. But since the housing crisis, Cleveland officials have been getting banks to pay for the demolition as well. From member station WCPN, Mari Saito reports.
Bill Beavers has lived on Cleveland's Dove Street since 1967. But on a recent sunny morning, Beavers is sitting on a neighbor's front porch, watching something he has never seen on his block before. Across the street, a huge excavator is tearing through the front facade of a two-story wooden house. The top half of the house, windows, exterior wall and all, folds as easily as cut weeds and tumbles to the ground. You can see the rooms, much like in a dollhouse.
Oh, it's good to see it, to see them tear these old structures down, because nobody wants to move in them. It costs too much to fix them up, you know.
The house went into foreclosure 2 years ago. When the family moved out, vandals stole the circuit panel and pipes. Other houses on the block are nicely kept up. But the street is in the 44105 zip code, which in 2007 had the dubious distinction of garnering the highest foreclosure rate in the nation. Saturated with foreclosures, the lender that took back the house couldn't unload it for even $5,000. Gus Frangos heads the Cuyahoga County Land Bank that oversees these demolitions.
Property like that on a street that's otherwise relatively stable but depressed market probably needs to come down because it has, you know, way too much need on the inside. If you take these pockmarks out, all of a sudden you stabilize the street a little bit.
When the land bank started 2 years ago, Frangos thought the group would have to pay its demolition bill from its own budget. But the economy worsened and the foreclosures piled up, and lenders stuck with crumbling houses found themselves on the hook in Cleveland Housing Court for hundreds of thousands of dollars of code violations. The Cuyahoga County Land Bank offered lenders a deal. We'll take your worst houses if you pay to knock them down. This year, some of the country's biggest lenders like Bank of America, Citibank, Wells Fargo, and Fannie Mae will help pay for half of the Land Bank's 700 scheduled demolitions. Lenders pay between $3,500 to $7,500 per house. Wells Fargo's Russ Cross says it's a sensible and responsible business plan.
We want to make loans on an ongoing basis. To do so, we need stable to rising home values. We've got to do whatever we can to protect home values in neighborhoods.
Some lenders are looking at starting similar programs in Detroit, Chicago, and Milwaukee. Fannie Mae's P.J. McCarthy says the government-controlled mortgage giant has been donating properties and demolition funds to the Cuyahoga County Land Bank since 2009 because keeping the houses just doesn't make sense.
They're not going to sell on the market for much more than a few thousand dollars, and our costs in marketing those properties and in preserving them generally exceed the costs. And so the economics of the transaction make sense, as well as the intent of the land bank to reduce supply and stabilize the neighborhood.
Dealing with foreclosures is a huge headache for financial institutions. RealtyTrack, an online marketplace for bank-owned property, counted more than 1.6 million foreclosures in the U.S. in July. RealtyTrack's Rick Sharga says demolition programs like Cleveland's only start to address the backlog.
But eliminating a handful of these houses really isn't going to be a cure-all in and of itself. It's one step in a much longer process that's going to be required before the housing market comes back.
And in the meantime, cities have to figure out what to do with the newly vacant land. In South Euclid, an eastern suburb of Cleveland, building inspector Rick Loconte is walking on a brick path through small plots of tomatoes, eggplants, and sunflowers, and remembers what used to be here.
The house was so far gone, we couldn't fix it up and get any kind of a return. So we demolished the house and we put in this community garden, and it's now become a source of community pride.
Loconte concedes there are more vacant lots than demand for community gardens. Municipalities are also offering newly vacated land to neighbors as side lots and putting other plots away for if and when the housing market improves here. For NPR News, I'm Mari Saito in Cleveland.
This is All Things Considered. From NPR News, I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke said today that the central bank will do all that it can to restore economic growth and jobs in the U.S. But he offered no specifics and made no promise of additional Fed action anytime soon. The stock market initially sank on the news, but later rallied, perhaps in response to Bernanke's forecast for long-term economic growth. From Jackson Hole, Wyoming, NPR's Scott Horsley reports.
Bernanke's speech had a gorgeous backdrop, the scenic Jackson Lake Lodge, the site of an annual policy conference. And the Fed chairman's long-range forecast was as bright as the morning sunshine, glinting off the Teton Range. But Bernanke also acknowledged economic clouds on the near horizon. Unemployment is still above 9%. And the Commerce Department said today the economy grew at a measly annual rate of 1% during the second quarter. Policymakers have tried to blame this sluggish recovery on temporary factors like the Japanese tsunami or the jump in oil prices that followed the Arab Spring. But Bernanke acknowledged today more persistent factors are also dragging the economy down, including the deep slump in the housing market. With that in mind, he said, Fed leaders are extending their September meeting for a second day, in which they'll discuss whether to use some of the additional tools available to them to stimulate the economy. Chief economist Nariman Baravesh of the forecasting firm IHS Global Insight says the Fed's already worn out its biggest hammer, pounding short-term interest rates about as low as they'll go, and suggesting they'll stay there for two more years.
Clearly, the power of monetary policy is considerably diminished when interest rates get down close to zero. The Fed's not powerless here, but its powers are somewhat diminished just by virtue of the fact that we're in this very low interest rate world right now.
Some were hoping for more from Bernanke's speech today. At the same conference last year, he laid the groundwork for what became known as QE2, a strategy of aggressive bond buying that's credited with temporarily boosting the stock market. Since then, though, fears of inflation have resurfaced, and some politicians have begun to criticize the Fed for going too far. So Bernanke was cautious in his remarks today. He pointed out that a lot of economic policy is set not by the Fed, but by Congress and the White House, and he suggested short-term measures could help by putting more people back to work. Mohammed El Arian, who heads the giant PIMCO bond fund, says the recovery is fragile indeed.
We are right now in a very delicate situation. Think of the image of our economy is traveling on this very bumpy road and has used all its spare tires. In that circumstance, you do not want to blow a tire.
Bernanke said Congress and the White House didn't help matters with their recent fight over the debt ceiling, which rattled financial markets and probably hurt the economy. El Arian agrees with the Fed chairman, saying the government needs to do a better job of crafting economic policy.
Right now, most policymakers, with the exception of the Fed, are basically asleep at the wheel. We have seen very little policy actions out of Washington. We need a major reformulation of the policymaking process, because if we stay paralyzed like this, we will end up blowing quite a few tires and we don't have many spares left on this car.
President Obama, who also likes automotive metaphors, is preparing to unveil his jobs proposal early next month. It's not clear in this political climate whether that plan will find any traction. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Jackson Hole, Wyoming.